Aaron, what do you think of a vegan business type podcast?
Well, it's my go-to every time I'm on the treadmill, and it makes that bit of exercise go so much, because I'm educating my mind as well as my body. And, you know, if you're not a member, why the flipping heck are you not a member? Come and join in. If you're going to do anything today, don't bother with PR. Just bloody go and sign up to Vegan Business Tribe.
Welcome to episode 117 of the Vegan Business Tribe podcast with myself, David Pennell. And Vegan Business Tribe is here to support you and to inspire you, not just to build a vegan business, but to build a successful vegan business. And you can listen along on Spotify, on Apple, or just wherever you get your podcasts. So you can also watch the video version of this on YouTube too. And thank you, as always, to our amazing sponsors, who are Vegan Accountants, Mindful Wealth, The Vegan Publisher, and Mad Promotions. And in fact, right at the start there, you heard a clip from Kevin Ridgers, who is the founder of MAD, or Make a Difference Promotions. Because last week, Karen ran a live online workshop for us on how to get your vegan business in the news. And we had over, I think, 60 people join us live on that session on Zoom. And so if you missed it and you want to know how you can get your business in the news as a form of free advertising, then if you are already a Vegan Business Tribe member, you can watch along. You can watch the playback of that session along with hundreds of hours of masterclasses and interviews and other content from the last 4 years of Vegan Business Tribe, all in our Vegan Business Academy on the website. And if you are not yet a member and you want to get a free month's access to Vegan Business Tribe, then just go to veganbusinesstribe.com/free-month. So that's our website address, veganbusinesstribe.com, and then /free-month. And there you'll be able to claim a 3 months membership and get access to absolutely everything that we do. And if you sign up for this 3 month, just at the moment, you'll also get a free 20-minute one-to-one with myself on Zoom so that we can talk about your business or just about your idea for a business. So if you want to run something past me, if you want to pick my brains or just not sure on where to go next with your business, then this is the perfect opportunity for you and me to have that conversation. Okay, so let's get started, because we've got a big episode this week, because today I'm bringing you an interview with somebody who's a bit of a hero to many vegan business owners, and that is Andy Shovell, who is the co-founder of a company called This. And This, they were the fastest growing food company in the UK last year. And note, I didn't say the fastest growing vegan food company, just the fastest growing food company, full stop. And their signature product, which is called This Is Not Bacon, and that's where the company name comes from, that is available in pretty much every supermarket here in the UK. It's available at lots of restaurants and hotels and in prepackaged sandwiches. And right at the centre of that, for the last 5 years, has been Andy Shovell and his co-founder, Pete Sharman. Now, I mentioned there that Andy is something of a hero to many vegan business owners, but not everybody in the vegan sector is his biggest fan. And we go into that in the interview, because Andy, he is laser focused on getting people to move away from eating meat and eating animal alternatives instead. And that just means that his company, it's more focused on the meat eaters than it is on vegans. And not everybody likes that. But as we always say at Vegan Business Tribe, if you have a vegan business and you only sell to vegans, then you're kind of missing the point of having a vegan business in the first place. Okay, so let's get started. And remember, if you're listening to the audio version of this episode, then you can go find the video version over on YouTube. And if you're already watching on YouTube and you don't want to have to look at my face for the next half hour, then you can also find the audio-only version of this podcast on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your pods. So I'm actually quite excited today because I'm joined by one of the true rock stars of the vegan business world at the moment, Mr. Andy Shovel, co-founder of This. Now, there's a lot I want to ask you about today, Andy, but I want to start by asking, how does it feel to be the poster boy of a plant-based sector?
You are so kind, and I would actually say like a million times too kind. I don't think that's my status, but if people draw inspiration from our journey at This, then I'm obviously really happy about it. And I think that I sort of see our role and my role in the vegan category as trying my best and our best to make it mainstream. That's like the guiding star for everything we do. And it's the lens through which I see pretty much every decision. Like, is this going to make plant-based more mainstream and break into the meat-eating population? And that's kind of what I care about the most. So if that can encourage other people in the vegan world to do the same, then that's like mission accomplished as far as I'm concerned.
Now, you launched This with your business partner, Pete Sharman, back in 2018, I think it was. But what I find fascinating about your story is how it's been fairly intrinsically linked to your own journey. And that's often the case with a lot of our Vegan Business Tribe members, because This wasn't the first company that you and Pete launched, was it? If we jump back several years ago, you actually had a gourmet burger delivery service. And people might be surprised to hear that those weren't plant-based burgers. They were animal meat burgers, right?
Yeah, correct. I was a big meat eater, sold meat for a living. At the time of starting This, I was responsible for more animal consumption and suffering than almost anybody you'd find on the street, unless they were a founder of a bigger meat business. I had a pretty bad challenging starting position. Luckily, we sold far more vegan meat alternatives than we sold meat. So that's hopefully my record somewhat cleaned up. But it's true. I've gone full circle from 2016 when we sold that business.
So did that give you an insight into the meat industry?
Yeah, 100%. But I wouldn't say that's actually what led me to the current sort of worldview I have around animals and animal welfare. I think where it was helpful for today's position I'm in is that it really upskilled me in the ways of speaking to meat eaters and understanding what the agenda of your average passionate meat eater is and what they care about. And so I think that's really helped build a toolkit at This for trying to be relatable, basically. I'm not like, an always vegan founder founding a vegan business in the sense that I've not been in that bubble for very long. I was just in the meat eater world. I know most people were, but I was really in it. You know, I had a meat business. So I think that's quite helpful when it comes to our business.
Do you think, though, that that's maybe where those first seeds were planted for your own vegan journey too? Just learning about the sustainability of animal agriculture?
I honestly don't think so. Funnily enough, I was not remotely moved at the time by, I just didn't make the connection. I was sort of, like most of us do or have done, I just compartmentalized it and didn't put two and two together. Didn't think about the fact that I liked pets and I didn't really care much for sort of production animals. And I just don't think it had anything to do with it. And you mentioned sustainability, but I'm not a sustainability warrior. I'm certainly not someone that wants to see the world burn. Far from it, obviously. But I am plant-based and I'm starting my animal-focused charity, and I get out of bed every day to work at This because I don't believe that animals should suffer. I think they have the right to not suffer and to be treated fairly and equitably. And so for me, it's all about that. It's like literally 100% that, 0% anything else. It's for me a happy coincidence that it's much more sustainable to eat plant-based foods. But personally speaking, not on behalf of the brand, like personally, I am fully motivated by the suffering of animals.
So at what point between those two companies, you know, the world's most meaty company and the world's least meaty company, at what point did you actually start to make that connection?
So it was actually after we got started with the planning of this. I was dating a girl and she showed me, I actually texted her just the other day, just reminding her about this. She showed me a video on YouTube of chicks being like baby chicks who were sort of 2 days old, being macerated in a grinder. So they were ground up alive. They're on this conveyor belt cheaping 1 minute, and then the camera pans across and then you see them fall into a grinder where their bits of beak and claw are coming out, spitting out of the grinder. And at the time, she's just showed me with no context. She's like, just said, look at this. And I looked at it and I was really shocked by it. Because obviously one's first thoughts are, oh, cute chicks, so sweet and fluffy and bouncy and yellow. And then your next thought is, oh my God. And you sort of feel like you've watched some really hardcore like snuff video from the dark web. And then it turned out, as she told me, although she wasn't really an expert, but she told me that this happens in the egg industry as a matter of course. And in the UK, we either macerate or suffocate. Normally in the UK, we suffocate about 25 million to 30 million chicks a year who are male chicks because they don't lay eggs. So they're no good to the egg industry. And when I learned that, I was really surprised because I had always thought that the egg industry was like a relatively harmless industry for animals. I just thought, oh, well, chickens do lay eggs, so we just must pick them up. And that made me think, well, if that, I'm someone who I think is probably quite intellectually arrogant. Like I think I know stuff. I think I know how the world works, and I'm normally normally quite misplaced arrogance, but that's how I think. And so it rocked me to think that I was certain of the fact that the egg industry was completely harmless to animals. And I would have had an argument with someone, probably a vegan, I guess, to that effect. And so it really rocked me. And I thought, geez, I must go and learn then what else I don't know about how food is produced. And what else goes on? Because I had exposure to the meat industry in my previous business, but I never went to a slaughterhouse. We would go to butchers and industrial butchers, and you know, it would all be quite sanitized, really. You'd see just cuts of meat and that'd be it. You wouldn't hear the screams or anything. So then I went on this process over a period of months of like learning about other areas of the food system. And to my disappointment, and more than disappointment, actually, to my disgust, the cruelty is utterly comprehensive from one corner to the other corner of the food system that we enjoy. And that was it, really. That was enough for me once I'd learned all those things. Sort of almost felt like I'd sort of woken up.
So what you and I have in common, Andy, is that exact same video got me. And, you know, I was vegetarian at the time and I looked at that and I thought, I thought, what kind of third world backwards country is doing this? And then I realised, you know, it was within Europe, you know, within the UK. And that led me to then look at the dairy industry, you know, and just like you, I assumed that cows just made milk because that's what they did. I didn't realise that the only way we're getting that milk is if that baby cow, is that they've just given birth and then that baby cow is taken out of the picture. So that's really interesting to hear that kind of journey to go through, and especially that you went through that kind of after planning to set up this. It wasn't a case that you had this big revelation, turned vegan, and then thought you wanted to do something about it. You were already on that kind of journey. That's quite serendipitous, isn't it?
Yeah, really weird. People, I think, sometimes don't believe it when I tell them they're really two different lanes, and they really were. Like, it was just my job, and my job was I was founding this company. I'd been founding other companies before it. I've now been a founder for like 16 years, so it's always just like a day job. And I was not emotionally invested in this at the time, apart from the fact that I was excited to start this company and I thought it was a good gap in the market and stuff. Yeah, obviously now the two have converged into one lane because I sort of go to work and get out of bed because I'm motivated by, my personal beliefs. But at the time, it was completely serendipitous, as you say. And just a sort of happy accident, really.
Do you want to speak at more events? Do you want to get invited onto podcasts like this one? Well, it's far easier to do that if you can say that you have written a book. So let me tell you about The Vegan Publisher. Their founder, Mitali, she is a best-selling business author herself. And Mitali and her team, they will lead you through that entire process of becoming a published author, transforming you into the thought leader of your industry. And writing a book, it isn't just a great marketing activity to get you more clients. Trust me, Being a published author, it will open up doors to opportunities that you never even knew existed. So, even if you think you don't have the time to write a book, or even if you don't know what you might write a book about, go take a look at theveganpublisher.com to find out more. If you are a UK vegan business, wouldn't it be better to have an accountant that shares your ethics? Well, vegan accountants have got over 30 years of experience, and they're a vegan-founded company. And just to add, they're also our accountants at Vegan Business Tribe, because they just get us. They understand why we do what we do, and they make sure that we're doing it in the most tax-efficient way possible. Keith and his team, they've been massive supporters of our mission at Vegan Business Tribe. So if you are an established UK business with a growth mindset and you want an accountant that is going to help you grow and shares your mission as well as saves you tax, then just go to veganaccountants.co.uk to find out more. Yeah, so just moving then on to the business side of what you do, because you just mentioned there that you've been a founder for 16 years, that you've had successful businesses before. Do you think that the massive success that you've had, especially with raising funding in the first couple of years of this, that they were because investors could see that you'd already had, you know, previous successful businesses? How much do you think that kind of gets factored into getting people interested in your company?
So I think it factored into the very first round of investment, because when you're going as somebody who's had a couple of exits and has built up businesses, although I will caveat that these were not huge businesses. You're talking about businesses with like one million turnover, and one of them had like a few hundred grand, whatever, like smaller businesses. It does definitely help that you have some degree of track record and you're not a first-time founder. But then once you get past that first round, and in our case, the round was about 900,000 we raised for the first round. Once you get past that into the later rounds, nobody cares really. It's more about what you've done up until that point with this business. It's just that very, very first round that it can be quite helpful, because you've got nothing else to show for yourself really. So if you can talk about track record, that's like something to bring to the table.
And I think a lot of the time that people are looking to actually invest in people sometimes more than the business idea.
Yeah, I think so, especially at that very early stage, for sure.
Yeah. And what I also love about, you know, your own journey there is pretty much everybody that I know who's got a successful business, they didn't actually find that success necessarily in the place that they thought they were going to find it when they started out. You know, they quite often they would launch a business and then that allowed them to learn about customers or about a sector. And from that, they then discovered the opportunities that they didn't even know, you know, were there when they first started out. So quite often I think you find success in the business world just by keeping an open mind about what the business is that you're building and allowing yourself to follow some of those opportunities.
Yeah, I agree, definitely.
Is that something that you've been doing with this? You know, I mean, do you have a vision of what this was going to be? And is that company now the company that you started out to build?
I think more or less it actually is quite consistent with what we imagined. I think if we're really honest, neither of us thought that it was going to grow at the speed that it has done. So that's been quite surprising, I think. We've become, one of the sort of market leading players in the UK, and in really only about 3.5-4 years. We've been trading now for 4 years and 4 months. So we're still quite a young business. We launched in 2019, and I don't think we expect it to be where we are. Otherwise, I think more or less it's where we kind of envisaged it being, to be honest. Yeah, I think so.
Well, let's just talk about that growth then, because you are, and I don't know if this still is the case, but you are the UK's fastest growing food business, not the UK's fastest growing vegan food business, but the UK's fastest growing food business in general. Now, people could just say that you just got lucky, that you're in the right place at the right time with plant-based food, but other companies, they were also in the right place at the right time, but their sales have gone down whilst, you know, yours has continued to grow. So what's made this succeed while others have struggled in this marketplace? Has it been the mindset? Has it been the product? Or has it just been that you've had more money? You know, what has it been?
I think it's 50% product, 50% brand. And, you know, the have more money point, I think you only unlock capital if you have something compelling to begin with, right? People don't just give you money on hopes and dreams. They give you money because you are demonstrating competent execution in terms of product and brand and distribution and everything else. So our execution and all those subheadings I just kind of mentioned, they have unlocked capital for us to keep on leaning in and sort of growing further. I do think that in terms of why we've managed to forge a strong position when others have not necessarily done the same is product and brand 50-50. We've created an innovation engine, so like R&D function in the business, which is really formidable. We've got like a team of 20 scientists who are just full-time product development. They're our biggest team in the business. And it's allowed us to really, really like lead the world, I think, when it comes to texture, fat systems, taste, appearance, things like skin on our sausages, super realistic to the animal version. You know, the Streaky Bacon, although it had some teething problems when it launched, it's now like unbelievably similar to Streaky Bacon that you would find from pork. So we've managed to do all those things from a product perspective because of our approach and our resource and the people that we have in the innovation function. And then on the brand side as well, I think we've managed to create a sort of tone of voice, which is really distinctive and disruptive. And we've chosen to entertain and shock people rather than lecture them about the environmental concerns of meat or the ethical concerns. And that's ended up being a sort of bet that's worked out quite well.
Well, let me just follow up on that one as well, because I think how you approach your branding and your marketing, it has to be different if you've got this goal of being a larger, successful brand. I mean, my background is in marketing, and there's always this misconception that you can only, you know, do marketing from behind a computer keyboard. But I think what you've done at this is you've done some really innovative marketing. I mean, I've seen you dressed up as a giant pack of bacon out on the street, and you also did, what was it? Was it the 10p Instagram challenge or campaign or something like that? So yeah. Just explain that kind of approach to marketing.
Yeah, so it was basically a thesis which I cooked up at the very, very beginning when we were doing our business plan, which was basically that when you mention vegan food or vegan stuff in general to non-vegans, they almost just tense up a bit and they get defensive and they just think, oh, here we bloody go, like, going to hear about vegan crap. And I just think people have this inner skepticism, defensiveness. They think they're under siege and their way of life is being questioned when they hear anything to do with veganism. And that was what I decided. It might not be right, but that's what I decided. So then I was like, well, how can you sneak through those defenses? You know, how can you disarm somebody's defensiveness and get through to them when you have a vegan thing to sell? And so I decided that the best way to do it would be to entertain them and to be relatable to them and to shock them and surprise them and make them feel strong stuff, rather than, you know, just be part of that, what I regarded to be kind of white noise around veganism, where people just hear it, but they don't really listen to it. So that was the reason why everything is kind of silly and like a bit risky and sometimes funny. It seems like a sort of like chaotic, you know, like reckless form of marketing that's not really thought through, but it actually is quite calculated, and we're trying to make people laugh and give them chances to conventionally fall in love with our brand before we kind of, or actually not before, we never really want to broach those topics about veganism or environmentalism. We just want the product to then sing. So the brand piece kind of then, once it's done its job and it's driven the consideration and the trial, it then just passes the buck over to the product, and that product can then sing for itself. And that's kind of why I say 50% brand, 50% product. And that's why I say it in that order as well, because first the brand gets them in and then the product keeps them there. So that's the approach when it comes to marketing.
And what kind of impact has that marketing had? Because I mentioned that idea, I think, did you send 10 pence to your customers to basically give you an Instagram review?
Yeah, so it was when we launched our D2C service, and we basically included a note with the package, and there was a 10p piece sellotape to each note.
I love that.
Basically just said, we were just about to formalize our marketing budget for the year. We decided instead of giving it to Zuckerberg, we'd just give you the money instead. If you can just like take the money and just maybe tell your friends and write a review on Instagram, that'd be great. And it's only a little thing because the D2C business was not enormous, but it is, yeah, it's the sort of ingenuity that we really, you know, strive for basically on a daily basis. Like we really want to kind of lead the way when it comes to engaging people. And I think we have to. I think most vegan brands, in my opinion, do not appreciate the fact that they need to perform every single day more than a meat-based or a dairy-based business has to, because we have a barrier to entry in people's consciousness that other people, other brands don't have because of that defensiveness and because of that skepticism about veganism. So we need to over-deliver versus your average brand in the supermarket. It's not parity. We don't have the same playing field. We have to over-deliver when it comes to marketing.
And I think you mentioned then that the two things that you would attribute to your success was the brand and the product. But I think also that mindset has to play a part in this. It has to have done somewhere along the line, because people don't always start out with a big vision of what they're looking to achieve. And so often, you know, when somebody launches a business, they kind of stop at the point where they've basically just, you know, created a job for themselves. But, you know, those business owners that go beyond that, it's almost like they start out with a completely different mindset. And there's just this bigger goal of creating something much bigger from day one. So is that something that you recognize in yourself?
I would say not verbatim, actually, in my head to what you just said. It's more that I think our approach, me and Pete, is to basically just be quite tunnel vision to, at the very beginning, to certain goals. And that goal might be, okay, we need to create the best plant-based bacon in the world, or we need the best texture for our plant-based chicken, or whatever it is. And then on the branding side, just execute. And I think if you get too caught up in the bigger picture and you start having daydreams about your multinational offices all around the world, I think you start to just lose grip on the execution, which is the most important thing at the beginning. You just need to execute all the time to the absolute best of everyone's abilities. And I think that's probably the mindset. It's more just like, just keep pummeling. I think this is the case with any successful startup, probably from the ground up. Is like, you just need to be an absolute beast. And like when there are things in the way, you just have to keep plowing on, and you have to laugh when somebody says you can't do it and you're not going to do it. And it's just like, that's probably the most important mindset. It's just that resilience and stubbornness.
If you are looking to get your business in the news or on the radio or interviewed on TV, then no one's going to get your company noticed like Karen Ridgers and her team at Mad Promotions. And Karen, she's been at the forefront of the vegan media scene for the last 20 years. And Mad Promotions, they're also our media partners at Vegan Business Tribe. So if you've read about us in Plant Based News or in VegConomist, then that's probably because Karen got that story there. So if you are an ethical company or entrepreneur that wants more media coverage, and if you're a company that is looking to make a difference, then that's literally what Mad Promotion stands for. Karen, she's worked with Veganuary, VegFest, and all the other big names. So go find out more at mad-promotions.com. Did you know that in the UK alone, there is currently around £3 trillion invested in pensions? And much of that money, it's helping to fund harmful industries like tobacco, fossil fuels, gambling, and animal agriculture. So if instead you want to put your money where your heart is, then Jay Street is the founder of Mindful Wealth, our UK-based independent and vegan financial advisor here at Vegan Business Tribe. And because they are truly independent, they're not restricted to any specific investment range, so they can find the best option that works for you both financially and ethically. Although do note that the value of your investments, it can go down as well as up. But you don't need to have a lot of money invested to make a difference. If you want to talk about your financial planning, whether you're just starting your journey or you need a little guidance on how to create and maintain good habits, then book a free discovery call with Jay by heading to mindfulwealth.uk. And I have seen businesses that have maybe got actually quite mediocre products or mediocre, you know, business ideas, but their execution has just been so brilliant that they've made that into a really, really successful business. So that whole idea of, you know, just keep doing the good things and that will make good things happen, I think that's something that will resonate with a lot of people as well. One thing I want to also talk about, and you've kind of all almost drifted into this already, is when I've read interviews with you, you know, in publications like The Grocer or one of the mainstream news outlets, the veganism side, that is hardly mentioned in the interview. And sometimes you'll see in the last third of a story that the person interviewing you, they'll mention something about you wanting to take animals out of the food system. But it's always that kind of tacked on afterthought to the interview. But yeah. As an ethical vegan, have you felt that you have had to make some compromises in how you talk about veganism in order to build that successful companies? Do you feel that you've kind of had to shy away from that ethical side when you're talking to customers and investors?
Yes, definitely. When we talk to customers, when we talk to end customers, so when I say customers, I mean like the retailers and restaurant groups and stuff. And then when we talk to end consumers, when we talk to investors, although investors, you don't need to dumb it down too much, but when we talk to press, it depends what the story is. If it's about something that this is doing, generally I won't mention it. It's only kind of forums like we're having now where, you know, you're sort of keen to explore the kind of inner workings and the mentality of I guess, me and the founders. Like, that's when I feel it's you know, appropriate to go into. But I don't think your average person on the street it finds it very relatable when they hear about the reasons for veganism, certainly packaged in the conventional ways of just saying it how it is. I'm not sure, you know, that's kind of why I don't really promote my own personal ethical views when I've got my kind of professional hat on, I suppose. And I am in the process, I told you via email, I'm in the process of setting up a charity called A Bit Weird. And A Bit Weird is going to try and repackage and market in quite a different way the messages around animal rights and veganism in a more relatable way for people. So, you know, just to summarize, I suppose, you know, an example could be, we suffocate 25 million chicks a year in gas chambers in the UK. A Bit Weird. You know, if you think it's a bit weird, then so it's kind of like really, in spite of my own beliefs that it's effing horrific, you know, I'm sort of got my marketeer's hat on and I want to package the information in a way that people won't recoil and feel defensive. So it's going to be sort of my take on animal rights advocacy rather than the more traditional sense of this is all really grave and terrible. And if you don't do something about it, you're terrible.
And that is really interesting, because do you think that maybe as vegans in business, that we do actually have that duty to educate more people, you know, that there are real victims of eating animal meat, you know, even if that does maybe impact on sales? Because there is the argument that if we don't, then there is always that real possibility that the end consumer, they still won't make that ethical connection and they'll just go back to eating animal meat once that novelty of a new plant-based product kind of wears off.
Well, a couple of things there. I think I'm going to pick up on one aspect of what you said, which is, you know, even if it affects sales. And I think that you know, if you're selling a vegan product, then sales are the most important thing for you when it comes to making change, and not just any old sales. And this is my gripe with some of the sort of vegan business community. And it's why some of the vegan business community, I think I'm a bit of a knob, because always go on about the fact that if you're selling vegan products and you market them and configure everything to be for vegans, and your customer base is 95%+ vegan, you are not making any change. You are not saving any animals net. You are not solving any cruelty problems in our food system. You are basically achieving not much. And that's why people get quite annoyed with me sometimes when I have these debates with people. And I think that, you know, what people don't necessarily understand at first glance is if you just redistribute some of the vegan pound from one vegan brand to another and you just sell to vegan people, then there's still the same net amount of demand for non-vegan products out there. And so unless you are penetrating the mainstream and getting meat eaters or dairy drinkers to come onto your brand's vehicle for change, then you're not actually changing anything. And so, you know, sometimes we get... really angry comments or messages when we've done something a bit controversial from some corners of the vegan community, saying stuff like, why can't you be more like VFC? And I respect VFC and I respect the founders and everything else, but VFC are configured for vegans. Maybe they would say differently, but my opinion is that VFC is a brand that is configured more for vegans. And that's why the person's saying that. Why can't you be more like VFC and sort of be a bit of a protest kind of movement, you know, as part of that protest movement of the vegan community? And the reason, which I think I've kind of just gone into in the last few minutes, that we're not like that is because we have to configure everything for the mainstream, because we want to make change and reduce the number of animals in the food system. Our company mission is to force the world's livestock into retirement. And we're not going to do that if we just take sales from, I don't know, V-Bites or some other vegan brand, and we just take them onto our brand. It's just not going to help. It's not going to achieve our mission. And so that's why, in case there's anyone listening who's written one of these angry comments, that's why we're not like VFC and some of these other like very vegan for vegans kind of brands.
And I think that when you look at companies like Beyond Meat, I mean, Beyond Meat's own market research, their internal market research, showed that 93% of the people buying their burgers were meat eaters. Yeah. And, you know, so that's the first, you know, indication that we had that they're actually taking the sales away from the meat industries and moving it that way. But it's interesting looking at people like VFC, you know, and if you haven't come across VFC, if you're listening to this, you know, that's the Vegan Fried Chicken Company, which was launched by Veganuary founder Matthew Glover and Adam Lyons. And they have gone with that vegan message because, you know, research showed that I think it was a third of the population actually say that eating vegan is quite a virtuous and honourable thing to do when they're looking at the animal ethics side of that as well. So, you know, what they've done, as you rightly say, you know, they teamed up with Joey Carbstrong to go undercover to show consumers what, you know, what it's really like in those meat factories. Because I guess as part of that argument, there is the consideration that in the long term, if we replace the word vegan with plant-based, then we might have taken away our actual one point of difference as a vegan company. So if you take a plant-based product made by a vegan company and put that on the shelf next to a plant-based product made by a company who also make meat products, but you've removed that ethical vegan message, then in the eyes of the consumers, all that's left to fight on is the price and the brand recognition, which the larger company, that they're usually going to win that.
Yeah, but great. So what, I would say? If you've got a meat company on shelf next to, say, us or VFC, and the meat company's got vegan products, apart from the personal vested interest I have in us being bigger than the meat company, who cares? Because if the meat company gets bigger than the vegan companies in selling plant-based food, that's only a good thing, because that is them diversifying away from selling meat and into selling plant-based products. So personally, I don't have any problem with meat companies being successful in the vegan space at all. And then sometimes I think that the vegan movement, and this isn't some loosely veiled like dig at you having what you just said, but just generally in the vegan community, I think sometimes the church and the sanctity of the vegan church is almost more important than animals and like saving animals and getting them out of the food system. And I think sometimes people prioritize, you know, sort of like squeaky clean, like perfectly whiter than white, like vegan standards that have been established, rather than actually the guiding star being how many animals are we taking out of cruelty. And I personally only care about the number of animals that are taken away from harm and cruelty. I do not care, like literally 0% of me cares about the sanctity of the vegan movement or the vegan church. I don't care. And like for me, that puts me at odds with a lot of the sort of more committed vegan community, which I find disappointing, but ultimately don't care that much because I'm on my mission and I want to save animals. I don't want to be part of a club and I don't care about it.
And what you're saying there, that has been very similar to what people like Heather Mills would have said as well, you know. In fact, I think you've said as well that this isn't aimed at vegans, it's aimed at those meat eaters. And in the past, I did read an interview where you said that you want to be leading that recruitment drive to getting people to try plant-based.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we don't want to shun vegans because obviously they are still a fairly chunky part of our customer base. But we do, as far as I know, have the biggest contingent of meat eaters versus all the other vegan brands, bar potentially corn because of their like size. But I think we do lead the way in terms of like smaller challenger brands when it comes to how much of our consumer base is non-vegan. So that makes me happy. And that's what I think we should be chasing.
Do you see a time in the market when that might change, when it might well be that consumer opinion of veganism and just general knowledge about the food system has got to the point where a brand like this could lead with the vegan message?
I don't know. I hope so. Obviously, that's my hope, is that we go from being a sort of fringe group, which is largely ignored, to the mainstream one day. That's clearly what I want to happen, and any vegan might want to happen. I personally think the word vegan has had terminal reputational damage. So that's why I never use it. I don't use it to describe myself. I don't use it to describe the company. I do think that the damage to the word has reached terminal, sort of, you know, a point of terminal kind of damage, I think. Yeah.
I just wanted to break off for a second to ask, are you just following this podcast without being a member of Vegan Business Tribe? Because if you are, then let me tell you, you are missing out on about 80% of everything that goes on at Vegan Business Tribe, including incredible resources and a vibrant community of like-minded vegan business owners from around the world. Because as a member of Vegan Business Tribe, you'll gain access to hundreds of hours of online courses and guides and masterclasses in our Vegan Business Academy to help you grow your vegan business. You'll also get to attend our regular online networking meetups where you can promote your business and just forge those connections with fellow vegan business owners just like you. Plus, if you need more direct advice and assistance, you can join us on a live business clinic, or you can post a question in our community hub where all our other members plus our vegan business experts are waiting to help you out. And the best part, it's just £18.99 a month. And at the same time, you'll also be supporting the work that we do to champion the vegan business scene around the world. And just to add that we've now also recently introduced one-to-one business coaching and mentoring with myself or one of our vegan business experts. And that's available to a select number of our members. So if you're really looking to take your vegan business to the next level, then we've got you. Don't just lurk on the sidelines. There is a whole community of vegan businesses who want to get to know you and support you. Just head to veganbusinesstribe.com. Click on that big join button on the homepage, and I cannot wait to connect with you and discuss your vegan business or your next big idea. So well, just to extend that as well, I mean, you've talked a lot about the innovation that you do at this, and you've got your 20 research scientists, you know, working on what's happening in the future. We've got some quite exciting developments like, you know, cultured meat, lab-grown meat and things like that. Do you think that when we get to the point where animal meat can be made but without the animal, that actually then leads to a point where veganism and plant-based companies like this might actually just become sidelined and are just not needed anymore?
If hypothetically, maybe, but in practice, if that were to happen, it would happen over many, many years. And the chances are that our company and others like it would probably adopt the technology. It would be, you know, an appropriate platform from which to launch such a technology, actually. And I'm, you know, keeping pretty close to that world. And I know a lot of what's going on. And I know the founders in that space. And I think that should it ever break through into the mainstream, we would probably be, you know, one of the companies that would be likely to adopt it. So I don't necessarily see it as a route to our own redundancy as a company. I see it as an opportunity where we could, you know, leverage a new technology for a wider customer base and a more exciting product proposition. However, I will probably also note that it's many, many years away from filling, you know, lorries going to Tesco, right? Like that technology has got quite a few big hurdles that are yet to be overcome.
Yes, but I guess it does have that potential to almost remove animals from the food system overnight. Well, not quite overnight, but maybe within a generation.
Certainly. Yeah, it's really exciting. Yeah. Really, really exciting. And I think for pet food as well, not many people seem to talk about this, but yes, for pet food, I think it's probably a bit more likely to happen in the next 5 years. I think that it's... because we must remember, pet food is actually probably the biggest crutch that the meat industry has, apart from subsidies, because, you know, they basically make all their human grade meat and then they scrape everything off the floor and that goes into pet food. All the spleens and the hearts and the lungs and everything. And so if you take out that crutch financially, and it is a crutch because all of that would just be waste, but they're able to find a home for it and charge for it in the pet food industry. So if you take that away through cultivated meat, then you could be onto a really exciting body blow to the meat industry. And so for pet food, I'm actually massively excited. And the reason why it's more likely to happen with pet food and cultivated meat is because one of the biggest unanswered questions at the moment is how to get that texture and the architecture of meat with the sort of muscle fibers that humans just take for granted and we all kind of request whenever we're having meat. We don't know how to do that yet with cultivated meat, and it would take lots of onward processing and we just haven't figured out yet. Whereas when it comes to animals, they don't care about the fibrousness and the texture. They just care about the, you know, the fact it has taurine in it, the fact that it has the protein, the fact that it has the smell and everything else. So that's why, yeah, for pet food, it could be really exciting.
Brilliant. And then finally, Andy, I want to come back to you, Andy the vegan. And now you're now able to make a bigger impact now that you've built this incredible platform. And you mentioned earlier, you know, the new animal charity that you're setting up and things like that as well. Do you think that this is going to be a continuing part of your journey as well? I mean, we have so many amazing, you know, people who found vegan businesses and they go on and use that platform they've built to actually really help the vegan cause move forwards. Do you see that same kind of trajectory in your own future?
I daydream or dream when I'm sleeping every single night and day of being the biggest change maker in the animal rights kind of movement in history. That's like my ambition. I'm
small goals.
Yeah, I'm deadly serious. I am way more ambitious when it comes to my future advocacy work than I have ever been with anything commercial. I feel extremely strongly and literally I'm actually obsessed, I would say. I'm totally obsessed with what I hope to achieve in the sort of animal advocacy world. So in answer to your question, a resounding yes. My entire life is going to be dedicated to that mission, basically.
So when will we find out more about the animal charity? When's that going to be launching? What's your first plan with that?
Yeah, so I'm going to be launching that in probably about 2 months, I'd say, maybe 3 months from now. I'm just working on the brand identity at the moment. I'm doing a lot of the planning and the strategy work. And to start with, it's going to have quite humble beginnings. It's going to be quite project-based, so quite specific. And the first project I'm going to be taking on is actually the banning of chick culling in the egg industry, as we talked about at the beginning. For many reasons, it's a big impact job. So, you know, 25 million chicks a year in the UK is a big number. It's quite a painful death for the chicks who, you know, they generally, I think, use CO2 in the gas chambers, which gives them sensation of burning alive because anything with a membrane like the airways and the eyes starts burning with CO2. I think it's barbaric, disgusting, and I'm not going to sort of stand for it. So I'm going to get the law changed to ban it in the UK. That's going to be my first project. And then as the charity hopefully grows through showing success, we'll take on more and more different projects and try and change different laws and just basically make the world a better place for animals bit by bit until one day, hopefully, maybe when I'm dead, we can help be responsible for just bringing the whole house down and you know, just completely realign how humans treat animals.
Well, we do have a couple of Vegan Business Tribe members who have managed to get laws changed around animal welfare. So maybe we can hook you up with a couple of those people too. But yeah, what I want to do then, because I mean, this has been absolutely brilliant, but I'm going to finish us off just by bringing us back to the business side of what you do. So I'm going to ask you for one last piece of advice. So if someone is watching or listening to this and they're either currently growing a vegan business or you've inspired them to maybe start one up, then what would your closing overall piece of advice be? And it might not be a food business, because at Vegan Business Tribe, we've got vegan accountants, vegan PR companies, you know, we've even got vegan financial advisors and publishers. So what would your advice be to someone who's maybe a few years behind where you are now?
So I've got one piece of very unsexy, very practical advice for anyone that's got a small business or even a pre-launch startup, and they want to then grow that business into something much bigger. My piece of advice would probably be, this is, as you can probably tell based on a mistake that we made, is make sure that if you think you're going to grow and you've got ambitions to grow, you hire an experienced team earlier than you think you need them. Because in our case, we're still picking up the pieces from basically growing quite quickly and then not having anyone really that senior in the business to like organize that growth in the right way. So it can be quite devastating actually on lots of different fronts, whether it's culture, ways of working, operations, supply chain, finance, everything. So it's very, very important that you as an early stage founder like make sure that you get senior people in place way before you think you need them. And then you'll be set up for growth. And it might just seem like a little insignificant side point, but I can promise you it's very fundamental, very important, and you will save yourself lots of pain. I would have a lot more hair. I'm sort of thinning quite a lot. I would have a lot more hair if I had had that advice back when we started.
Andy, you've got more than I have.
But I do look out to me when I started bending down to show. I was like, oh, actually, yeah, fair.
But I mean, I think maybe, you know, some of the best advice I ever got was, if you are going to build a business, then actually decide to build a business. And it comes back to that idea that sometimes people just, you know, they're quite limited in what they're trying to build, or they just sort of create a job for themselves. And so I'm guessing the earlier that you can start thinking like a larger business, then the quicker you're going to become one.
Yeah, definitely. Because you can have the luxury to like cherry pick which bits of your strategy you want to be a small agile startup and which bits you want to be a sort of thinking like a bigger company. And I think when it comes to the way you market the products, the way you develop the products at speed, and the way you fulfill consumer needs really quickly with agility, that can all be from the kind of entrepreneurial like small startup way of thinking. But then, as you say, you can start to cherry pick ways to think a bit more grown up in a more grown up way, you know, like I was describing, getting a senior team and other things.
That is absolutely brilliant. So thank you so much for your time on, Andy. I do appreciate you are a very busy person, but we've been talking to Andy Shuffle, the co-founder of this. And Andy, if somebody wants to find out more about this, or they're now inspired to rush out and try your products, where's the best place for them to go?
They can go to any UK supermarket chain, pretty much, except for
any UK supermarket chain. Any.
Well, not quite any, apart from Aldi, Lidl. We're not in M&S, but they can go to all the other major ones. So Tesco, Sainsbury's, Asda, Morrison's, Waitrose, Ocado. And they can also go to lots of restaurant chains that we're in as well, like Greg's, Cafe Nero, and you know, Brewdog and all the rest of it. So yeah, lots of places you can try us.
Absolutely brilliant. And what about outside the UK? Are you exporting yet?
Yeah, so we're now in the Netherlands. It's the first internationalizing we've done as a business. So you can go and get your clogs on and go and get high in a cafe and try us.
So for our listeners in the Netherlands, get your clogs on. That is absolutely brilliant. So thank you so much for your time, Andy. And hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
I always love talking with Andy. But since we recorded that interview, Andy actually had some really big news in that he's just announced that him and his co-founder Pete, they're going to be stepping down as the CEOs of this. And that's not unusual for the founders to step back when a company gets to this size. And that's because the skill set to take a company from first launching to where they are now, which is, I think, about £24 million turnover, Andy said, that's a very different skill set to the one you need to take a company from where they are now to get to £100 million turnover, which is their goal. You need to bring in a specialist team of people who have already done that before. So Andy just announced that Mark Cunningham will be taking over as the CEO of this. And Mark, he's the former CEO of Ella's Kitchen, who are already trading at that 80 million plus level that this are looking to reach. So hopefully the company is going to be in extremely good hands. But it does look like Andy's plans for now becoming better known as an animal rights advocate, they're just about to start. Okay, so that is it for this week. So please do give this podcast a like or give it a thumbs up and make sure that you are subscribed to our channel on YouTube so that you don't miss any of our free content. And if you are listening to us on Apple or a platform that lets you leave a review of some kind, then please do give us a 5-star review or rating because it really helps us to get discovered by other vegan business owners. And maybe I'll give you a shout out on a future episode too. And remember, finally, before I let you go, if you are not yet a member of Vegan Business Tribe, you can help support us in everything that we do to champion the vegan business scene around the world by joining your tribe. And if you join, that gives you full access to all of our support. It gives you full access to me, but also our community of hundreds of vegan business owners around the world. And if you want to try us out for free for a month, then just head to veganbusinesstribe.com/free-month. And I will see you on the next one.